Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly and Mike Gregg. This episode, we will be previewing the upcoming match performed against Bournemouth tomorrow night at Craven Cottage. Before that, we'll have another segment of the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable, which includes us debating questions I put on the Cottage Talk Facebook page for fans to comment on. And today, we have two very good topics for you to discuss and us to discuss as well. We also have some breaking form news that I will be mentioning shortly, but it looks like one of my co-hosts is on the line. David, are you with me?
Hi, Russ.
Hi, David. We have some breaking form news. I'm not sure if you're aware of it. You probably are, knowing you. So I'm just going to start the show going into it. Sound good?
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine, yeah.
Okay. Well, again, just so you know, you can go on the fulhamfc.com website and an article is up now, Kit's Bournemouth Preview. And if you go into it, you will see the announcement of Alan Kerbishley joining Kit Simon's backroom team until the end of the season. Again, you can go right on the Fulham website and see this as part of Kit's Bournemouth Preview. David, what are your thoughts about this breaking news?
We kind of been talking about it, haven't we, previously, saying that it might happen or it could be a good idea. It's kind of, I suppose, not a big shock, really, because we all think that Kit needs a bit of help there. And there seemed to be this bond between the two of them. I think Kit, you know, it was reported to enjoyed working with Kerbishley before when he was at the club. So not a massive surprise that I think Kit's getting a bit of experienced help. So I guess it's just the fact that not so long ago it was ruled out completely and now suddenly it's... back on the cards again. So, yeah, no, I mean, it's. I would say it's a positive move that someone who, you know, has a lot of experience in the game and that Kit has worked with and enjoys working with, this is always going to be the problem, wasn't it? So, find the right mix. So, yeah, I think that's okay.
I think it's a good move, David, and I find it interesting that it's until the end of the season, but that's, you know, again, it is what it is. It's till the end of the season. That's what it says in this preview and mentions specifically until the end of the season. But I'm going to read a quote from Kit, and it's from the article. Quote, I'm delighted Alan is someone who I know reasonably well, and I know him by reputation extremely well, Simon said. He's been around a long time with a wealth of experience. That's the one thing that myself and my staff, who has been fantastic, I've got to say, haven't got it at this level. He's got that experience in abundance. It is certainly tapping into him trying to get as much knowledge and use his experience as much as possible. I want to be as good as I can be and want the staff to be as good as they can be, and I want the football club to do as well as it can. And Alan Kerbishley coming in will help that. Very interesting tape there, David. What are your thoughts about those comments from Kit?
Well, it's kind of what we've been saying, isn't it? I think it's Kit. Gee, I suppose to me, Kit is saying that he does need a bit of help, isn't it?
Right.
I think it's as straightforward as that, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. He's just basically saying that he needs help, and he's willing to take on the help, and he's admitting that in this, and this is a good thing. You know, for me, this is a good thing. And also, you know, again, he believes that Kerbishley can help him, which is even a better thing, David.
The only thing I'd say over this is, was this something completely of free will? Or is this something that's been foisted upon him? You know, has someone said to him, you know, we're not really happy with what you're doing. We're bringing someone else in if you don't like it, you know, or we're just doing this anyway. You know, I'm sure it's not the end of the world for Kit because, as I say, it's someone he's worked with.
Right.
But do you think Kit was given any sort of ultimatum saying, right, you need help, we're bringing someone in, like it or lump it, and, you know, maybe Kit had some say in who came in, I don't know. Or was it just, you know, who instigated this? I suppose that's what I'm trying to say, really. Where did it actually start?
Yeah, we, you know, and that's something we just don't know, David. Very good point. Again, was this coming from Kit? But, I mean, it sounds like he's open to it, and that, to me, is the bigger issue. A bigger issue, I should say, the best part of this, not issue, it's actually a good thing, is that he's open to it, apparently, you know, according to the article, he's open to it, and I think it's a good thing. I'm going to bring Mike on. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm good, Russ. Sorry about that. I was, Skype playing up again.
Yeah, shocker there with Skype. But we had an issue last night as well. Mike, first of all, I want to thank you. You were the one that told me about the breaking news, and, of course, I then found it myself. What are your thoughts about Kubrickson coming into the fold until the end of the season?
I think, Wes, it's something we spoke about only on a show, two or three weeks ago that we felt.
Yeah.
An experienced head was needed, and, there's been rumours that he was approached earlier on in Kit's reign, and... and then nothing came of it, and I think it's a good move. Last dozen games, Kit, I feel, really needs to have a good end of season to carry on into next year, and he knows the club, so it's not as if he's going to have to come in and find his way around the offices or anything, is it? You might not recognise many of the players, but he knows how it all works. He knows Kit. And hopefully he's going to be the eye in the stand, and then someone who can come down and give some advice.
Exactly.
Just to see us over the hurdle for the rest of the season, and try and finish with a bit of a flourish. I mean, I think the fans after last year and the middle of this season, we deserve 6 or 7 wins in these last few games. I've said to people it's an audition for Kit. This season to go into next season, and I think this is his last throw of the dice, if you like.
Listen, very interesting tape, because again, it really is for me all about next season, and I do agree with you, Mike. I think these next 11 matches are going to have a huge impact on his future. If he does well, maybe the club backs him moving forward over the summer for next season. But again, it really, it's funny you put it that way, Mike. I could see where you're going on it. It is like a long audition. It really is. The end of the season. So why not bring in a seasoned pro that can help you out? I think this is a very good move. And, Mike, like we've talked about, again, this is someone to bounce ideas off of. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what he's needed. We look at him, quite a lonely figure sometimes on the touchline. I think Sean Reed is the other sort of main person who comes and speaks to him. But, I just feel he needs some help there. And, Kubrickson is a good choice. And, let's see what it does over the next few games.
Absolutely. David, what are your thoughts about this? Do you see it like Mike sees it as basically the end of the season audition, and this is – an opportunity to help him through that process for Kit?
Well, audition for who? I mean,
for Kit.
Is it on issue? Is Kubrickson waiting in the wings to take over if Kit?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. But I mean, who knows? But I'm talking more from a Kit perspective.
If Kit can't do the job without someone experienced helping him, then is he necessarily the right man for the job? Will he ever be able to go it alone? Will this change him? I mean, just it opens lots of questions up. I mean, I think for now we have to look at this only short term. It's a fix till the end of the season, hopefully.
Right.
And you say bounce ideas off him. Well, let's hope he does. Let's hope we see a little bit of a change away from some of the rigidity we've seen. The lack of Plan B, and maybe the reluctance to make subs, and that sticking to the diamond system throughout, and regardless of whatever else, and it worked. See, just because things worked on Saturday against Derby doesn't mean they did work against Watford. And for me, and I know we're not talking about Watford exactly, I know Mike was there. To me,
yep.
It seems that he made the changes too late. I haven't listened to what you said yesterday at all. Sorry, I was busy.
Okay.
But it was too late when he made the changes. And the first change he made was to take off Woodrow for Roddy Egar, which seemed to be a bit of a strange change. It was only when he actually took off Ruiz for Smith. I know Mike doesn't like the sort of football that involved, but at least we did suddenly become dangerous and we did become different.
It was a plan B. Here we are talking about a plan B,
yeah.
David. It certainly was a plan B. Again, I've watched the replay.
Late,
I don't know
it?
If you had
for
a chance.
It was
but,
much too late.
Yeah.
It's
certainly argue about that.
If he was going to do that, he should have done it probably when he did the first substitute, or even earlier,
okay.
Because clearly we did cause them some problems towards the end, and you know, the way it was going, it was probably, you know, would have been Fulham would have got the next goal. But, you know, this is, and these are the sort of things that we need to be thinking about, that, you know, we need to be a bit cuter, don't we, in some of our decisions we make, as, you know, team selection and when to make substitutions, and also being proactive when the other team makes changes. And, you know, they're talking about Kirby being in the back room, isn't it, in his staff. How much of the four will he be on a match day? This is the thing. Is he going to be sitting up in the cottage? Or will he be there in Kitsia saying, well, why don't we do this and why don't we do that? And, you know, it's quite interesting to see how much of a role he has in actually the management of the team on a match day, or whether it's more
right.
to do with the coaching and things in the background in between matches.
No, listen, it's actually fascinating, David. You bring up a very good point because, again, we don't know exactly how Kirbishley is going to be involved. Is he going to be involved on match day? Is it just going to be leading up to the match? You know, is he going to be at the cottage? You know, again, I have a feeling he is. Again, that's just my thoughts on it. But how much involvement will he have? Again, only time will tell. But I think it's a good thing that he's in the fold. And listen, I'm glad that you actually brought up the last match because, Mike, I want to go to you. I haven't talked to you. I've seen you tweet a little bit about the last match. We did a show yesterday about it, but you were there. So just share with me your thoughts about the match and also about the substitution. David did mention the late substitution of Matt Smith and Kaká. You know, again, it did make a difference. Obviously, we didn't get the goal. You know, it was the last 15 minutes of the match. Did he make it too late? You know, just an overall thought of this match the other night. I'm just curious where you're coming from watching that match. I don't know if you watched the replay of it, but you were there, so that doesn't really matter. But I'm just curious your thoughts on it.
I haven't watched the replay, no. I mean, if I did, I'd probably watch the last 20 minutes, 25 minutes. The match, well, actually, the subs were... Sorry, I'm dying there. I thought the subs actually 76 minutes for the double sub. That's about right for...
Okay.
Throwing on a big man, I didn't have a problem with that because it gives you 15 minutes to really throw everything at the opposition, and that's pretty much what we did. And we had I would say probably a great 10 minutes there where we were camped in their half. And yes, Smith was winning the headers, and David's quite right. I'm not a fan of that type of play, but there is a place for it, and you know. Chasing the game with 15, 20 minutes to go is the right one. He probably could have, instead of bringing Rodallega on for Woodrow, he maybe should have brought Smith on, maybe at that time, to at least see how Smith, you know, worked with Woodrow, with McCormick. You know, that was the only thing, and certainly the crowd wanted Smith on. There's absolutely no doubt about that. But to go to that sort of 4-2-4 almost, and just throw everything at him. Yeah, that's what you do when you're chasing the game. But I'm
right.
not keen on Smith starting, I'll be perfectly honest. But, it was effective. Unfortunately, it didn't, you know, lead to a goal. And I think he won about 6 or 7 headers.
He did.
And we could have done better. I thought McCormick had a really good chance, which he should have taken. And a little bit of hesitancy by, you know, Fofana and a couple of the others at times. I did feel like a little bit sorry for Rodallega. You know, everything he did just didn't work. And,
it didn't.
He didn't make any fans that night, that's for sure. But, it was overall the game, while I was watching it, the first half, I didn't think we were that good. And the second half, we were a bit better. And in retrospect, a draw would have been a nice result. Again, it just proved to me, you know, we say it again and again, there's not a lot of difference between the clubs in the Championship, and what Watford do is they get the ball forward quickly, they get it wide, they've got the strong men up front, and they have a system and a plan, and they're organised. And we dealt with them pretty well for the whole game, and you just feel it's such a missed opportunity looking back over this season. We should certainly be top 8-9 at least. At this stage, with a hint of the playoff possibilities, but instead we're looking at what we're looking at the moment.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Mike, because I watched the replay, and it reminded me a little bit of the Wolves match. I'm talking about the first half where unfortunately in the Wolves situation we gave up the two late goals. But you're talking about just kind of hanging on in the first half. Like you said, not great, not terrible, but not great. And then you're down 1-0, you give up again another goal off of a set piece, which is horrible, off of a corner kick. And you're behind the eight ball once again, and you're fighting throughout the entire match to get that goal back. And the one thing that I will say, I'm glad that you mentioned this. You mentioned the style differences because, again, how much of a difference is there between a Watford and a Fulham? Again, you know, if you look at all the numbers and, all the stats, we went through all of them. You know, most of them do favor Fulham, but again, it's about the goals, and that's the bottom line, and what you do with the possession that you have. It's not always having the possession, it's what you do with it. And like you mentioned, the one thing that I want to go back to, Mike, I know that you don't like the style of play that Matt Smith offers. I'm there with you on that, okay? But for a plan B, Mike, it's not such a bad thing, because here we are complaining about not having a plan B. This is not a bad alternative, Mike.
I know, and I'm all in favour of that. Like I say, I don't want it to start. I'm not keen on him starting. It's almost a shock tactic that we have to use. I mean, David would have seen plenty of teams play quite direct, and I don't care what anyone says. The fullbacks and the defenders were getting the ball, and Smith was running across the back four to the opposite side of the ball, and it was all about, can we get a diagonal long ball out
yep.
to him from the halfway line. And that's what I said earlier when I'd like to go back and watch it, because that's pretty much what I felt at the game. So you've watched it. Is that pretty much
yep.
how it came across? Cause, yeah, I thought so.
That's exactly how it came off, Mike. You're 100%
yeah.
right about that. The best way I described it, it reminded me of watching Andy Carroll or Stoke
yeah.
before
yeah.
they changed. You know, it reminded me so much of that. And I thought, in a small dose, it's not such a bad idea when you're chasing the game. Do I want to see 90 minutes of it? Absolutely not. I'm there with you on that. But as a change of pace, as something to possibly change the game, I don't think it's a bad plan B. I think if you use him correctly, he could be effective, Mike. I just don't want to see him become, I guess you could say star games. I'm there with you on that because I think that would change how Fulham play, Mike.
Yes, and it's also a very easy tactic. Once teams suss you out, it can be nullified quite easily. I think we've got lots of... We talk about a plan B, and Kit doesn't really do that. This is the first time he mucks around with tactics a little, formation maybe. But this is a proper plan B. But we have different options. You know, we've got four or five strikers, all very different in their own way. McCormick, Smith, Woodrow, Rodallega, Dembele,
yep.
even Taggart. I mean, I had a conversation with someone online today very briefly, and I actually think the best striker we have in the squad to play with Matt Smith is Taggart, because he's a runner and a little bit like Andy Johnson was. You know, he's looking
right.
at picking up things as they come down, and I would be, I wouldn't be surprised if those two together would be very effective for someone.
Huh.
But
wow.
But yeah, Smith is there, and I'm sure he's, he will either start or be on the bench tomorrow. And it's horses for courses. If we're playing a team where we feel we need to do that, then yeah, bring him on. If you feel it's Dembele or Woodrow or someone else, then you bring them on as well.
Right.
So just have to see how it goes. But yeah, his first appearance since coming back off loan was effective, and he certainly won a lot of people over. I do find it funny, after last week it was Woodrow has to start every game, and now it's Smith has to start every game. But that's us scratching around, trying to find the right combination up front.
Yeah, it's fascinating right now because you said we have all different types of strikers here. You know, I like Dembele as well. So again, how does he fit in the mix? It's very interesting to see how Kit's going to make it all work. And now with Alan Kerbishley, how he'll have his influence on this as well. Listen, I think this is a fascinating last 11 matches. And I look forward to seeing how these guys are going to make it all work. And we're going to talk about the next match in a little bit. But before we do that, guys, let's go into the Cottage Talk Controversy Roundtable. I was looking for a couple of interesting topics for our, I guess you could say, not really midweek show, a Thursday show, looking for an interesting topic. And, David, I'm going to start with you. And I thought you'd be a perfect person to start this conversation with, okay? I put this on the Cars Talk Facebook page. Who has been the best central midfielder you've seen wear a Fulham shirt? Now, obviously, my time is much more limited, and there have been different types of players in central midfield. So I'm curious for you, who's been the best?
This is such a difficult question because
I know it is.
So many. I mean, when you have,
right,
you know, a typical team, you have two strikers, but you have, well, I suppose you have two central midfielders, but as well, if you're talking only about central midfielders.
Just talking central.
I mean, obviously, I suppose in recent times, you know, that someone like Danny Murphy is going to be up there, isn't he? Because of, you know, he was at the club at a good period, and what he brought to the game, he could actually tackle, but he was, you know, a great user of the ball. He used the ball very well. Obviously, we had other people like when Dembele was moved to centre midfield. I thought he was a very good central midfielder, but we didn't
see
enough of him. Yeah, likewise, people like Diarra was a great player as well, especially in his first spell before he got injured. But I think you've got to try and look at people who've played a lot of games for us, really, over a consistent period. So before Danny Murphy, I don't know, maybe Steve Malbronk. He had a good spell, a good long spell with us. He was pretty consistent, although he was infuriating at times because, a bit like Brian Ruiz and stuff, I don't think he ever quite delivered with free kicks and corners as well as you'd hope him to. I think he, you know, didn't quite get his delivery in there as much as you'd like. Before him, Lee Clark was brilliant in centre midfield, as was Sean Davis. They both had good long spells at the club. Obviously, Lee Clark was a little bit encumbered by injury at one point, but, you know, they were part of that, you know, promotion-winning side and into the Premier League. And then, you know, you just keep going back and back. I suppose, you know, our friend Robert Wilson, who was on the show, you know, he had a good spell in central midfield for a long time.
Okay.
And his partnership with Ray Lewington, another great central midfielder. You've got to give Ray Lewington a lot of credit. You know,
okay,
he was a great player for his. He was a battler in midfield, a tiger in midfield. You know, I'm probably missing loads out here. I mean, when I first started, it was probably, I think it was Alan Mullery and Alan Slough were in central midfield. And, of course, Alan Mullery, you know, played for England a lot. And he had two spells at Fulham sandwiched with one at Spurs as well. He was a great central midfield player. I'm just trying to think who else we've had in between all these kind of other years, you know.
Okay.
We had so many ups and downs. So, I mean, for me, they're the ones that spring to mind initially. I'm sure, like I did with Luis Sahar the other week, I probably missed someone glaringly obvious out of that from the list.
But, what's the...
Yeah, so I think, yeah. So for me, it springs out, like, say, Alan Mullery, obviously, and
okay,
Ray Lewington, Robert Wilson there. And these are probably from teams that had good spells, obviously, the cup final one with Alan Mullery, Robert Wilson and Ray Lewington in the team, which got promoted from 3-2 and then nearly to 1 as well. And then in latter times, say, Davis, Clark, Mel Bronk into the early Premier League years, and then Danny Murphy, of course, and people like that.
Okay. No, very good, very good. Mike, how about you?
All right, well, having done zero sort of thinking about this, I think David's, you know, he's mentioned quite a lot there. I mean, I sort of started and had players like John Beck in the team. You know, I used to absolutely love him when I first started going. And, you know, we've had players like Simon Morgan playing midfield, even though he's really a defender, again, liked him. John Collins, for me, actually, was probably one of the most skillful players and I've seen in central midfield. I mean, Danny Murphy, so important. Diop as well, Legwinski,
yep.
Matt Bronk, Lee Clark. You know, we have had a lot of good players playing in one of those two central midfield roles. For me, though, if I was going to pick two of them, it would be John Collins and Danny Murphy. I just love the way they play. If you push me for one of them, I would go John Collins just for how skillful he was and how calm and what an influence he was at an important time for the club getting promotion. So, John Collins for me. But everyone else that David mentioned, and, you know, a couple there that I did, they're all worthy of a place you know, and what we could do with one of those, you know, one or two of them at the moment, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
I don't know if, let's turn it a little bit. Could David name probably two of the worst midfielders, and I'll give you Michael Brown and Mark Cooper to go with.
Okay. I'm surprised David didn't mention Steve Sidwell.
Indeed.
David?
Indeed. But,
okay. Well, listen. I'm gonna read the comments from the Fulham supporters, and then get your thoughts on it, and then we'll move on to topic number two. But I found this one just interesting because I'm just trying to find some different types of topics. I like talking about players from the past and talking about certain positions. Maybe by the end of the season we should do all starting 11 of Fulham all time. Maybe we'll do that the end of the year. But you know, again, we're doing this piece by piece, and I'll start with Roger Lewis. He says, I suppose you should class the maestro as a central midfielder. He used to control the center circle. Reese Curtis said, Steve Sidwell, without a doubt, I'm sure Holly would agree. Sanke Gorgo said, Danny Murphy. Steve O'Keefe said, Murphy. Tony Miles said, Murphy. Aaron A.Z. Arnott said, Danny Murphy. Steve Butters, Danny Murphy and Sean Davis. Harvey Pedrick said, Danny Murphy. Patrick Sullivan, love watching John Collins in his short time playing for us, particularly the friendly against Spurs when the ref told them to take Sherwood off for persistently fouling him. Couldn't get near him. Steve Lydiard said, for sheer potential commitment and ability, not to mention versatility, Dembele, the Spurs one. Murphy, a good shout-out, though. Chris Gilbertson, best Dembele, most important, Danny Murphy. Andy Fulham, FFC Newland, Danny Murphy, Steve Sidwell, Scott Parker, Papa Boba Diop. Let's see what else we got. Eton Redderv says there's only one Danny Murphy. Haven't been the same since. I totally agree with that. Jason Gaddy said Murphy was our best, but Diop was my favorite. And Paul Betts will finish this off by saying Danny Murphy for sure. Dembele comes close, though. Still not sure what his ideal position is. Very good point. David, what are your thoughts about that? And also talk about Moussa Dembele. You know, Moussa Dembele has not been the same player since he left Fulham, but in a short period of time, he really had a huge impact in central midfield.
Well, that was the thing with him. He kind of started, he played in that role that you all love doing, putting a left-footed player on the wing, and he played, I remember him playing wide midfield. And then he played as a striker, really, or a second striker, in that cam role, but then he actually became a proper central midfielder, and he was sitting there, you know, alongside someone like Diarra or Murphy.
Yep.
And with Ruiz in front of them in the cam, and they were so good that, you know, it allowed Ruiz more time and space to do what he does, and that's probably why, you know, he was just as good in the Premier League as he has been in the Championship, or maybe just as bad, but that's another story. But, no, Dembele was great, but we didn't see enough of him in that role for him to perhaps to be a total legend. It's people, for me, who've played a long time, and I'm sure the people who suggested Sidwell are on a wind-up, because if Steve Sidwell is the best midfielder they've ever seen, then we are in trouble. We are in real trouble.
Okay, good stuff. Mike, I want to go back to you, because, again, I noticed people mentioned Diop and Collins, and again, they're before my time with them. So why don't you tell us a little bit about them, your experience of watching both of those two players?
Well, Collins was just sublime, you know. I mean, he never panicked, keeps the ball on the floor, keeps it all ticking over, and he was taking our sort of man on the field. You know, he's the one who can spoke to the players, got them to understand the way play the game, and never seen a transformation in a team in a close season like that one. So just what he offered, he didn't play enough, really, when you look back. But when he did, no one could touch him, really, certainly at that level. And Diop was we used to call him the wardrobe, and he really was. You just could not get past him. On his day, untouchable, really, at times. And, you know, people talk about Torre at Man City, but Diop at times looked just as good. You know, maybe I'm over-egging it a bit there, but, Man Mountain. I stood next to him once, and, I would have needed a stepladder to sort of go head-to-head with him. two great players. Yeah.
Okay. Now, I'm going to give you one that again, doesn't deserve to be in this category, but I think it's overshadowed with what he did at Fulham, and that's Dixon Atuhu, Mike. You know, again, you might not like him as a player, I don't know, but I think at times he did a nice job for Fulham. What are your thoughts about Atuhu while we're talking about the position?
Well, I specifically liked his sort of five-yard passes back to Danny Murphy at chest height. They were especially good, but... looking back, it's all about Roy, isn't it? It's all about picking a team and everyone working for each other. And he was there to help Murphy break the play up. And we saw him change style when Mark Hughes became manager. He tried to get him more attacking, and it really didn't suit him, to be honest. So. Looking back, he was more important than I gave him credit for at the time. And when he was out of the team, we certainly missed him. And I'm sure Danny Murphy will speak highly of him. And, he's an unsung hero from the European games and the league performances. And it's just a pity injuries have really, been set him back when he went up to Blackburn. But, he was very, very good in the team, doing his job. I'm sure Roy,
right.
Every game, said in his ear, this is all I want you to do, and that's all he did.
Right, and that's my point, Mike, of bringing him up. I'm not saying he's a great player. I'm just saying he did his job, and I think he gets overlooked. And like you said, Danny Murphy would probably talk very highly of Dixon Atuhu. So that's why I just wanted to mention him. And David, I want to get your thoughts on Atuhu. I don't think I've ever talked to you about Atuhu, so I don't know what you think about him. So just share your thoughts on him as a player. Obviously, he's not going to be one of the best central midfield players we've had, but just what was his effect for you while he played at Fulham? Did you see him doing a job and maybe being underrated, or am I overrating what he did at his time at Fulham?
He was a very important piece in the jigsaw.
Okay.
He probably was underrated, and when he was left to do what he was good at, he was really good. He was very effective. He was strong. And the comparison I'd give you is that when Danny Murphy started playing for Roy, he had Bullard alongside him. That gave him. He had no protection. He had no one winning the ball for him. He had to win the ball and do it himself because Bullard was a lightweight. I mean, Bullard was a maverick. He was all over the place, and he was good at what he did, Bullard, and he brought entertainment, but. Danny Murphy had to do things the hard way. When Atuhu came in the team, it took a lot of that away from Murphy. Murphy didn't have to be the one winning the ball and everything. Atuhu's brief was very simple. He broke up play, he won the ball, he gave it to Murphy. And until, as Mike said, Mark Hughes tried to overcomplicate it maybe, he was great. And even at that stage, if you remember, we had Murphy and we had Atuhu, and Sidwell was on the bench. Sidwell wasn't getting in the team. Because Sidwell couldn't tackle as well as Atuhu, and he couldn't pass as well as Murphy. And he was a kind of in-between player. He was sort of he'd take the worst bits from both, maybe. I don't know.
Oh,
but he was a compromise player. No, he was a compromise player, though. Yeah, I think they tried to try and, get someone who could, who was a tackler and who could, box to box and could create. But he wasn't good enough at either. And when Atuhu and Murphy were at their prime together, they were fantastic. Just look back at some of the European matches and things. I think
absolutely, David.
That's why I wanted
to bring up Dixon Atuhu.
No, and he was hustling people off the ball. I mean, someone like Shakhtar Donetsk, it was very important because they were a team that they were skillful and they were quick, but they couldn't deal with strength. Maybe their downfall, they had no real height and stuff like that. And and consequently, we scored against them, away at Donetsk. From a set piece for Hangeland. And at corners, they offered no threat, not to us, really. Well, if only we had teams like them now to play every week, teams that offered no threats from corner. But no, he was fantastic, Atuhu. Him and Murphy, they were the perfect kind of compromise for each other, the coffee and the cream or whatever, cliches you want to use, really. They did, they had their own particular jobs and they helped each other out and they did well. And, some people got sometimes frustrated with Atuhu because they wanted him to do more than that little pass to Murphy. But that was his limit and everything. That was his job. And say, when he did that, it was fine. It freed up so much. Just, you know, just compare what Murphy had to do when he had Bullard alongside him.
Listen, it's a valid point, David, because you got me going back there to what it was like with Bullard compared to what it was with Atuhu. And Danny Murphy was allowed to do more with Dixon Atuhu. Basically, like you just said, each one had a job to do, and they were able to do it. It did change under Hughes because Hughes wanted Atuhu to do more than what he normally did, and that was probably a problem there. But under Roy Hodgson, Roy Hodgson knew what he was good at and just said, basically, do your job, and he did it, and he did it very effectively. That's why I wanted to bring up his name, because I don't hear many people talk about Atuhu, but I think he had a valuable role on that Europa League team. I do. I think he had a valuable role, and it sounds like both of you guys agree with me on that, and I don't think enough is talked about when it comes to Dixon Atuhu. Not a great player, a good, solid team player. He's a team player. All right, guys, enough talking about such a midfield. I'll come up with another position for next week. But let's move on. Let's go to my number two Cottage Talk Facebook question. And, Mike, I'm going to go to you. This is an interesting one, okay, and some very interesting answers from some of the Fulham supporters. I'm curious your thoughts on this. How many more wins do you see Fulham getting in the last 11 matches? I'm curious your thoughts, Mike.
Okay, I've had a look at the fixtures, and at best I can see us getting 5 wins. So I'm looking at Leeds at home, or Brentford at home, and then the run of 3, which is Wigan, Rotherham and Blackpool. I can see as, you know, you've got to be looking at those 5 games for me. Another couple of draws and we're looking at finishing on 56. At worst, I can just see us beating Wigan and Rotherham. So,
And then it'd be a little nervy. Is that what you're basically saying?
It would be very nervy. Yeah, because Wigan won the other day, and what did I say last week?
You did. Watch you did say, Mike, I have to give you credit. You said watch out for Wigan. You did say that.
Yeah. So it's going to be a bit nervy. That would be 5 wins from the last 9 games. Would that be enough for Kit? I think he probably needs to find another win from somewhere. But that would give us a nice, comfortable sort of finish, certainly with Borough and Norwich at the end. I would not want to go into those last 2 games needing anything.
Okay. Very, very interesting. All right. David, over to you. How many wins do you see out of the next 11 matches?
I can see us only getting about 3. But then, you know, 3, we kind of said, will hopefully be enough. I think, you know, I think the number one targets have got to be the Wigan and the Rotherham home matches, most certainly. And I think we'll pick up another one at least somewhere else. I'm not sure about Blackpool away. I could just see that being a disaster, knowing Fulham, or maybe a draw there. So maybe we'll come and surprise someone. Leeds at home, really they've got to go for that one as well. Maybe we'll do something tomorrow. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe they can remember what they did against Derby last week. Or one of the away games, you know, obviously. Middlesbrough, you never know what can happen there. I mean, all of them are winnable, really. But we don't want to be going down to the last game of the season away at your favourite place, do we, Russ, needing a win?
No, 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 David. We don't want to be needing a win down at Norwich. Ha ha.
Norwich.
Okay. So Mike said 5 at best, and it sounds like what? 2 at worst, Mike? Is that correct?
Yeah, 2 at worst, yeah.
2 at worst, 5 at best. David, put a number on it. I'm sorry, did you give us a number?
I said 3.
Pick
3 out of the air and say that's what win a win.
Okay, fine. Okay, I'm going to share what the Fulham supporters had to say, and then I'll share my thoughts on it as well, which I, you know, again, it's the comments are interesting from you guys and from the Fulham supporters. Some of them definitely agree with you guys, so I'll just start there. Dean Rossier says 4, Leeds, Rotherham, Wigan, and Borough. Roger Lewis says 4, Leeds, Wigan, Rotherham, Blackpool. Reese Curtis says 4, at least with the games we have left, if we can't win at least 4, whether we stay up or not, Kit has to go. Okay. Combe Bugler says, I had 4 in mind before the Derby game, so now it could be anything between 3 and 7 at a push. Ben Reed says 5 wins. He has Leeds, Brentford, Wigan, Rotherham, Blackpool, and a couple of draws along the way, too. Reckon we'll get something out of Friday night, too. Perhaps just a draw, though. Okay, so he's basically saying he thinks we might get a draw tomorrow night. Chris Cox, 6 wins, 1 draw, 4 defeats. Tom and Araman says 5 max. Matthew Camp says 5 wins, 2 draws, 4 defeats. Interesting. All right, Mike, what are your thoughts about what the Fulham supporters said? I would say the majority of them are somewhere around 4.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, it's about average. You look at those fixtures, there are some tough ones, but they're, you know, you look at, I really do look at that Wigan, Rotherham, Blackpool and just think, you know, you've got to be looking at 9. But Dave's quite right. We went to Millwall the other week, a team which is dreadful at home on a bad run, and, yeah, of course, what happens, we only get a draw. So, but I think we're better than Blackpool, whatever team we put out, so we should get a win there. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, they did, 3 to 5 is going to keep us up with no real worries. We just need to pick them up a bit, you know, a bit quicker so that we can not relax, but at least, you know, be able to finish the season without having any heart attacks.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, sooner than later. Let's get some wins sooner and try to take that off the table so we can concentrate on the end of the season. David, what are your thoughts about what the Fulham supporters had to say about the amount of wins?
Well, I think in the main they're in the same ballpark as we're talking about, really. There is, I would still say some of them are still showing signs of optimism. And if you look at, if you was to probably extrapolate from our current run, you know, for a while, I think it will be at the lower end than the upper end, to be honest with you, if we carry on with the same way we're going, because we only have, you know, 1 win in God knows how many years, and that was the first win for ages. So I think it'll be the case that we'll probably win one that we're not expected to win, and we'll probably not win one that we should be winning, really, at least. So that's why I don't see it more than about 3, but that should be enough hope to see us home. Obviously, the situation is that Wigan have come to life a little bit, which is not a problem in a way if Millwall then slip away, because we'll be back to the status quo, but we'll need to make sure, obviously, we stay ahead of teams like Rotherham and everyone else.
Okay, I never called it that, by the way. Okay, you keep saying that. I never called it Rotherham. I never did that, by the way. Okay, you think I did, but I never said that. The only one that I've really said wrong has been Norwich. Okay, I did do that one wrong. It's Norwich, okay? I got that one wrong. Okay, I admit it. I can admit my mistakes, David. Can you admit yours?
Oh, we need a whole show just for my mistake.
I know. Okay, I'm gonna give you mine. Mine's going to be 5, but mine is going to be a little bit different than Ben Reed. Ben Reed actually had Leeds, Brentford, Wigan, Rotherham, and Blackpool. I'm gonna take out the Leeds one. I'm gonna put in a different one, and I'll let you guys know what that is a little bit later. I think I'll have an idea of where I'm going on that. All right, guys. I was just checking the College Talk Facebook page, and someone actually posted a question to us, so I thought we might as well talk about it. And I don't know if either one of you happened to see the article today, which featured Ross McCormack, but he had an interesting quote in there, and this is what Eric Lindstrom said to me for us to discuss, so we're going to discuss it. And he did it this morning, so I'm just going to read it to you. He says, "Hey, Russ, I have a topic for you and your co-host on today's show against Bournemouth. A quote from McCormack on the match against Bournemouth. Quote, this is Ross McCormack quote, it will be tough, but we're at home and Scott Parker will probably be back fit, which will give us something extra in midfield as well." Eric says, "What does this quote tell you about what McCormack feels about the rest of the quality of the players in midfield? What does it tell you about the future?" Mike, I'm curious your thoughts, because, again, when I read that, the thought did cross my mind, you know, what was Ross McCormack getting at when he made that comment about, you know, about having Parker back, but also talking about having something extra in the midfield?
I think he's reading a little bit too much into that. I mean, when you talk about Parker coming back and giving you a bit extra, you're talking about his leadership and his experience, aren't you? I don't think it's saying, you know, those players who played the other day are useless and, you know, they can't lace his boots up. You know, I mean, I do think that, yeah, just a little bit read too much into that. If I was going to take any quote, out of that, it would be the last part of the article. And he says, do you want me, I'll tell you what it says. He goes, but I now feel like I'm playing and getting in positions that will hurt defenders.
Yeah.
So what was he doing previously? stuck out on the wing. That's what he was doing. So, you know, that little comment there was the one that got me. And
that's interesting.
That makes me think, you know, he's been told, or, you know, they've had a discussion that he's got to be closer to their defenders and much more central position for me. And we've all been calling for that for an age. So I know he went out on the left wing the other day, but, you know, it has to be said, over the last half a dozen games, he probably has been playing more central. He just needs to get a goal as well, you know. So he
Absolutely, Mike. You know, listen, we talked about this on the last show. He had three very good opportunities to score. And honestly, you know, I call for Ross McCormack to score each and every match. And he should have scored on at least one of those three opportunities. Would you agree with that, Mike, going back to the match that you just went to? He should have scored. Every one of those shots went right to Gomez.
Yeah, he should have scored. He's snatching at his chances. And he's when you actually see him playing live, he's someone who obviously gets very frustrated. And we've seen him react. Bit of red mist and a few little dives here and there, and I'm sure he's frustrated that he's not scoring as many goals as he did last season, but as a lot of us predicted, he's having his quiet year, so hopefully next season he'll have his, you know, high number of goals year, so as he pushes us towards promotion.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's good to see him more in a central position, but that's the line I would have taken. I think
that's what you got out of it,
about,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting, because right after you started talking about it, I actually have the actual article in front of me, because I was going to read it during the show, and it's funny that Eric brought that up, because I found this article interesting. And David, I'm going to go to you. You know, was the part that Mike mentioned, the quote of McCormack talking about playing more centrally, more interesting to you, or was it what Eric brought up about Scott Parker being something extra in midfield, and did he read too much into it? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
You could say as simple as that. It's just he's just showing what a good player Scott Parker is and how great it is when he's in the team, maybe. It could be nothing more than that, and it could be journalism or twisting of words that someone's saying, that they're saying when he's not in the team, then we're rubbish. Or, you know, maybe that was never said or inferred. He was just complimenting him, but... Yeah, the second part is definitely most interesting, because I think we've said that he's been played in a different role than what he was at Leeds. And we've certainly seen when he's up front, things looking more dangerous. So I'm not sure where that's come from, who's, you know, instigated that, whether McCormack's gone to Kit and said, look, I want to play more forward, or whether Kit said to him, we need you to play more forward. Don't drop back as much, which would be a kind of a bit rich, because he's been dropping him out wide and deeper. But, you know, you can take all these things with a pinch of salt, as far as I'm concerned. Journalists like to quote the bits that make a good story and leave a few words out, or, you know, change the intonation a little bit. So I wouldn't get too excited about it all this stage. I was more interested, actually, by the tweet from Simon Pater, who said that actually in Norwich, the locals actually do call it Norwich. So you're right again, Russ.
Okay. I was not aware of that. I'm just saying here we actually do call it Norwich, just so you know, David. But because you were harping on me that it's Norwich, I'm going to call it Norwich. And because I didn't want to keep hearing it from you each and every show, every time we talked about that club. So enough of that. David, do you want to dial back in now while we transition and break down the Bournemouth match?
Sure. Are we doing a Kit playback today?
We are not doing a Kit playback. Unfortunately, I had contacted Sam Green prior, and Sam said that you know, again, I haven't checked since we started the show, but the video was going to be late and probably wasn't going to be available for the show. So unfortunately, I'm not playing an audio clip from Kit today.
Okay, I'll be back in a minute then.
Okay, fantastic. All right. All right, Mike, while we wait for David to dial back in, I'll just start to share a little information on Bournemouth. You know, I did my homework today, watched some video to get me ready for to talk about Bournemouth, and I'll just share this. They are currently fourth. They have 18 wins. They have 9 draws, 8 losses. They've scored 69. They've only given up 38 for a goal differential of 31. They're on 63 points. In their last 6 matches, they have 1 win, 3 draws, and 2 losses. So, again, it hasn't been the best of times recently for Bournemouth. They actually recently got the Wolves victory. They then, before that, they drew to Blackburn. They lost to Nottingham Forest and Brentford. And before that, they had draws to Huddersfield and Derby County. So that kind of gets you caught up on them. Fulham are currently 20th with 11 wins, 6 draws, 18 losses, 46 goals scored, 59 given up, minus 13 goal differential. Yuck. On 39 points. Looks like they mostly play the 4-4-1-1. Their leading scorer is Callum Wilson on 18 goals. Jan Klemmer Gunt is at 13 goals, and another dangerous player, Matt Ritchie, is at 9. All right, Mike, just share with me your thoughts on Bournemouth so far this season to get us going.
Well, yeah, I mean, after Derby, they've been the second best team I've seen, and I think they surprised certainly Fulham fans this year in the style of football and the fact that they were top of the table for, you know, probably a couple of months. And yes, they've had a bad run recently, and actually I was quite happy to see them beat Wolves the other day, because the last thing we needed was to play them looking for a win after 6 or 7 games, because we all know
right.
what we do then. For a little club, Howe's had a long time there, and he's built a good, exciting team. When I went to see them away, the way they played, you know, with the wide men attacking us
yep.
all the time, I'd love us to play like that. I really would. And
so would I.
I'd be happy to see them go up. I think they'd come straight back down again, but their pocket, you know, 60 odd million quid. And, you know, thank you very much. That'll keep Bournemouth running for quite a while. But, maybe the fact that they started a little bit recently, the squad they have is not that large, so it might be catching up with him. He's kept quite a settled side. And, hopefully, not tomorrow, but hopefully, you know, from my point of view, they get enough wins to get one of the top 2 positions. They're certainly safe for a playoff. That's not going to be
yeah.
an issue. And, it's nice to see the little teams do well and to, you know, to show that it's not all about, you know, the number of fans you have. You know, the nice little 12,000 stadium they have. It's going to be interesting to see them in the Premier League, hopefully.
Listen, this is, you know, this is a good story and a very good club. And I do like the way that they play, Mike. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because, again, even going back looking at the highlights of the last 4 to 5 matches, which I did this morning, it reminded me of when Fulham played them. And I believe also when they played, I want to say, was it Liverpool or someone in a cup match where it was nonstop crosses into the box. And they are a very dangerous team. You know, again, against us, you know, I want your thoughts on this. I think the player that really we need to worry about in this match, again, Callum Wilson is a good player, is Matt Ritchie. And I'm concerned about someone like Stafelidis against Matt Ritchie. What are your thoughts about that matchup?
Yeah, I mean, he was very dangerous when we played him at their place. And but actually, he wasn't the most important player for them, I felt. Arter was the one who...
Harry Arter.
Yeah, he was the one who shone for me. He kept the ball ticking over. But Ritchie gave Stafelidis a bit of a rough time in that game. And Pugh as well, you know, he gave Grimmer.
Yes.
Both wingers, you know, that's the way they played. And the pace they had. It was quite embarrassing. Our fullbacks, whoever plays, lack pace. So anyone with pace against them is always a problem. So I would, when we talk about a team later, you know, there's only really one, a couple of options to sort of nullify that. But, yeah, Arthur's the one for me. And I think I read earlier that he is fit and he will be playing tomorrow. And so Parker will have to do a job on him like he did last week against Derby. And
yeah.
So that's what I'll be looking at, is that competition, because okay. Although Parker played that day, he didn't do that great.
Okay, so basically it's the brother-in-law battle that you're going to be looking at.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm looking forward to it, and, you know, I'm hoping Parker's 100% fit, ready to go, and, you know, bring it on.
Okay, fantastic. David, you're back with us. What are your thoughts about Bournemouth? Again, this is a dangerous team. It's funny, when I was doing a little homework today, just looking back at them, you look at the possession numbers. This team dominates holding the ball, and they do it from the back, and they move it up quickly, and they are dangerous with their crosses, as we've been talking about. But Mike brought up a good point that Harry Archer does a very good job in central midfield, and the battle with Scott Parker should be interesting. But what are your thoughts about the team coming to Craven Cottage tomorrow night?
I was speaking to one of the guys I play football with, who's a Wolves fan, because I think they played them the other day. And, you know, they got turned over by them, and, you know, he said they're a good side. But, you know, as you mentioned possession, and we've seen possession can be very misleading. You know, the team with the most possession isn't always the team that wins.
It's true.
It's what you do with the ball, obviously, when you have it. You know, if you look at Harry Archer and you look at Scott Parker, and you ask football fans up and down the country, you know, people probably say who to Harry Archer, and Scott Parker. Okay, he's getting on a bit, but you know, he's an England international not that long ago, and against Derby he was fantastic. And you'd think overall, you know, he would be the better player of the two, and therefore, in a one-to-one battle, you'd hope that Scott Parker can come out on top on this time. But it's not just about Scott Parker or Harry Archer, it's about who they've got around with them. And, you know, we mentioned Jigsaws before, or I mentioned Jigsaws when we were talking about a two-who. And it's how well that everyone fits in the Jigsaw. And against Derby, we had a great Jigsaw. You know, it all fitted nicely together. Everyone did their bit. And even players who, you know, weren't doing one thing were doing other things. You know, when I talk about maybe Ruiz, he wasn't getting forward and creating, but he was helping out, battling and stuff, and linking in with other people. So it's about the part played, and everyone pulled their weight. And I think that's what, you know, the impression I get about Bournemouth is that they have a team of players, they all pull their weight. They don't have any stars in the team, not really, no individuals as such. I know they have people who've been getting praise and people who've been linked with other clubs, but in the main, it's all a good, hard-working team, and he's got them playing very well together. And, you know, Arthur is just one piece of that jigsaw for them. And so, you know, we're going to have to be good in lots of areas. It's not just that one battle between Parker and his brother-in-law.
Okay. Fair enough. And we'll get into that in just a minute, David. But I'm going to go right back to you. And I want to get your thoughts on the referee. And I want to ask you this. You know, again, I'm not sure if you watched the replay. I remember asking you before. But the referee that you talked about in the last match, I think played a factor in the Watford match, by the way. You know, again, there were a couple of situations that were non-calls that could have gone either way. And also there were some issues that Fulham had that, again, a yellow card possibly could have been a red card. But that controversial referee actually played it pretty conservative. So I'm curious which referee we're going to be looking at for this match against Bournemouth.
That's right. There wasn't, you know, for Trevor Kettle, it was a very low-key match.
Yes.
And I think with Gentleman Jim, he gets quite excited. And, you know, from his commentary, he thought Fofana should have been sent off when it was a yellow card. But he thought we had penalties, but according to the neutrals, you know, no, they weren't. I saw on Twitter that Ian Abrahams, you know, Moose on TalkSport, said they weren't penalties. And that was the thing when... He says a lot of things, Gentleman Jim, and gets everyone excited, but doesn't. I think he's very, you know, it's good he favours Fulham, obviously not the other team, but sometimes I think he is a little bit, he gets too carried away with these things. And I saw one of the penalty incidents, and I wouldn't have given it, certainly not. I mean, It was high up. It was around the shoulder. The guy was turning his back. He didn't hit his hand. His hand was by his side. You can't give penalties like that, not really. And so, yeah, he was pretty conservative. The ref we have tomorrow night is Andrew Madeley, and he's one of two brothers. There's two brothers who referee, Robert Madeley and Andrew Madeley. And the funny thing is they were both in the Football League a couple of years ago, and they were talking about promotion, and Andy Madeley was tipped for promotion, but they actually gave it to Robert Madeley, and he was promoted instead to the Premier League. And Andy Madeley, people saying, if anything, they think he's the better ref, but he's the one still in refereeing in the Championship and in the lower league. So he comes with, you know, he's fairly well praised. He's quite a young ref as well. So, you know, you can't necessarily guarantee anything, but let's hope that, you know, he carries on and has a decent game. There's certainly nothing controversial about him, unlike Trevor Kettle. And I'd be interested, actually, Mike, if you could tell me very quickly how Trevor Kettle was the other night, because he's the one that attracts the most controversy of the lot, and I was interested to see how he performed.
Okay, Mike, what were your thoughts about the referee the other night?
Well, I didn't think either of our calls were penalties, to be honest. I thought he was... he likes to make a big thing about when he makes a decision, but actually, to be honest, I didn't notice him that much, which is always a good thing with a ref, so... I was fairly okay with him. There was nothing too controversial which I was looking at. If anything, we were lucky he didn't send Fofana off or Richard. So, you know, he gets a plus point there.
Okay. All right, Mike, I'm going to go back to you. Let's get into this. What does Fulham need to do to win this match, not get a draw? I want to talk about getting all 3 points against Bournemouth.
Oh, well, we need to do what we did last week against Derby, and we didn't do against Watford in the first half. It's obvious that for us to compete against these particular top teams, that we need to be on the game straight away, in their face, working hard and playing with a bit of momentum. We were talking about possession a couple of times. You've mentioned, you know, it's what you do with it, and I have to say on Tuesday there was far too much passing between Bodaroff and Tunnicliffe back to Hutchison to give it to Bodaroff to give it back to Hutchison to give it to Tunnicliffe to give it back, and it was all done within 30 yards of our goal, and you know, it was almost possibly one of the worst, certainly in the first half, one of the worst sort of possessions we were doing, where we were just mucking around with it at the back with no thought of how to get it forward. And you could argue there was no movement, but, you know, sometimes you've got to take a gamble and look for that pass. And, yeah, we can't do that, especially at home. You know, we have to get the crowd going under the lights against a very good, fast team. Need to be right on top of them. And Parker, well, you know, he needs to be leading from the front, getting those tackles in, and who's ever next to him as well. So that's
okay.
The only way I can see us winning. We've got to match these teams 100% for effort, because I actually don't, you know, organisational-wise, skill-wise, we're lacking in that. And so we have to make up for it in other places.
Okay. And, Mike, I'm curious. Again, I'm going to go to David, how to win this match. But going back to the last match, I know we keep going back to it. How much of a miss was Scott Parker?
Well, given his performance last week, a lot. But, yeah, I mean, we were very weak in midfield. There was passing was poor from those three midfielders, you know, behind Ruiz. And, you know, Ruiz, when he got the ball, it was going sideways or a little bit backwards. It just never worked. Midfield never worked at all. And, of course, for the last 20 minutes, we almost completely bypassed the middle two anyway. So... So, yeah, we missed him a lot, which is scary, really, because should we be relying on a 34-year-old, you know, this far into the season, we should really be doing, we should have other options.
Yeah. No, listen, I hear you, and Ben mentioned that on the show last night. You know, again, he's like, I hate to say it, but we missed LVC and him, because you don't have someone that's going to be making the passes and also running the way that those two players, and obviously LVC is injured, and that's an issue. Okay, David, to you. How do Fulham need to win this match? What do they need to do?
Well, I think we need to get somewhere close to what we did against Derby. It's pretty obvious. If you can play like that, you have a chance. But, you know, the interesting thing we can talk about in a minute is Kit's intimating that they'll, you know, there's a few injuries perhaps, or a few doubtful players, although Parker's back. When it'd be interesting to see who these potentially missing players are, as to what, you know, what role it is. Obviously, you know, and up front as well, what he does up there, because it's a quandary. I can see there's going to be a temptation to throw Smith in, but I would be very guided about that. So, to win the match, I think, you know, Bournemouth are quite good down the wings again. We're going to have to be as wide as we can. If he plays the diamond, he's going to need to play the wider version of the diamond. If he plays too narrow, they'll be down the wings. We'll be conceding corners. We'll be back to square one again. I suppose, in summary, don't concede an early goal has got to be the number one thing, really, I think, for us.
Okay. Okay. You know, and it's funny because I think two players that might play tomorrow and might even start could be Tim Hoogland, and also could be, believe it or not, Fernando Amorebieta. I believe both potentially could be available. Just keep that in mind in the mix when you guys are doing your starting 11, that you might see one of them. You know, again, I don't know if you'll see them both start, but they both might be involved. All right, Mike, over to you. Who's Fulham's key player for this match? Who needs to have an exceptional match? Would it be Scott Parker? Would it be someone else?
The easy option is Parker, and I'm going to go actually for McCormick. He owes us some goals, and
he does.
You know, he got close the other day. But you almost, you know, I've seen some people put some teams out or even discuss it, and it's very difficult. But there is almost, you know. Well, you know, do you keep him in the side? Do you drop him? I mean, obviously you're not going to drop him. He's going to start. But he's not been that great recently, and he really needs, you know, he's given a nice article. He said the right things. So for me, it's McCormick tomorrow. Leave Parker to lead from the middle. McCormick needs to lead from the front. Plenty of movement and take his chances when they come along.
Okay, so for you it's more about Ross McCormick. Interesting. David?
Yeah, I can see Mike's logic completely, because I think Scott Parker, he's pretty consistent, really. You get the same sort of thing from him. Sometimes he's a bit more effective, sometimes he's not. But you know what you get with him. Whereas McCormick has been much more up and down. And so I think Scott Parker, you could say it's a safe bet that he's going to give you 100%. It's just whether it all, you know, that jigsaw again, whether what he does works with other people. And like last time it did, you know, he's been stealing the ball off people and winning tackles. And it's gone to, you know, McCormack, and he's, you know, put in a cross for Woodrow to score and things like that before. But so I think, yeah, McCormack really does owe us, although I don't think he's always been poor lately. I thought he had a great game last Saturday against Derby. He really was, you know, he was running at them and putting balls through their legs and dribbling and creating problems. So I think, yeah, you're right. He needs to be, you know, hitting that target and getting the ball in the back of the net. It's no good, you know, like he did at Watford. That's you know, as bad as what we moan about Hugo for and everything else, when you get in good positions and don't finish them. You need to be more clinical. Other teams have been very clinical with us. You know, look at Watford the other night. Just one little sniff and it's in the back of the net. We need to be more clinical and ruthless, though. I think McCormack's a common factor, because we can't be sure who else he's going to play, but I think we can be pretty sure he will play. So, you know, it's all very well saying someone else should have a good game, but we don't even know if they're going to be starting or not. So I think McCormack and Parker, really, latterly, to have good games are what we need to sort of make a difference in this game.
Okay, fantastic. And you know, it's funny, because I was trying to remember, David, where I read about Tim Hoogland and Fernando Amorebieta. It was actually from the team news that's on the FulhamFC.com website. And they, you know, it talks about Tim Hoogland. He's been on the bench the last three matches, and Amorebieta was on the bench in the last match. So maybe that's where I was getting the idea that maybe we'll see these guys. I'm not sure. I'm just saying that I think that they're almost there. They're almost ready to go. It'd be interesting to see if Kit does play them. So that's going to let me go to you and give me your starting 11.
Me, yeah.
Yep.
Now, the inference I got from that is that Hoogland will start and Amabieta won't, because he said it'll one of them will start, and so you imagine it'll be Hoogland because he's the one who's closer back to fitness, if you know what I mean. He's had
right.
more games under his belt. So where is he be playing? That's very interesting, because I'd like to see him at right back, but I feel that Kit will probably play him in midfield and stick with Riches at right back, assuming Riches is fit. But this is the problem, because we don't know. For me, I would stick to the same back four or back five, just
yeah.
for consistency's sake. Obviously, they got a clean sheet last week, and you know they let in one last week, which is disappointing. But it wasn't directly from the corner as such as a height issue. It was more the second ball being closed down. So
yep.
I'm going to stick to the same back five.
Kit said. Yep.
Sorry?
No, Kit said the
more
second
that,
phase of it.
Yeah, that's it. It's the second phase. It's the second ball not being closed down enough. So I'm
right.
going to stick to the same back five. In fact, I'm tempted to stick to the majority of the team that started up at like for Derby and Watford, obviously, bar the injury situations. Obviously, Parker is a must coming back in. And then I would be tempted still again to go with Cawley and with Ross McCormack up front. And it's just a matter of Matt Smith being on the bench to come on as if a plan B is needed. Don't
okay.
bring on Hugo for plan B. If you have a plan B, bring on Matt Smith. Do something different at least. So the rest of the midfield, I'm certain he's going to pick Ruiz if he's fit. So it's the other two to go in there, really. And that's the interesting part. You can pur many out of Tunnicliffe or Hoogland or McKavanagh or Fofana, really. And it's just knowing who's injured and who isn't injured.
Right.
And out of those, if I had a choice, I would probably go actually for a home match that we need to win and do something different. I'd go for it's a good one, isn't it? I'm struggling here. I would go for Fofana and Tunnicliffe, those two. But I mean, he has said that Hoogland is fit, because Hoogland may play. But I'd go Tunnicliffe and Fofana. Tunnicliffe
okay.
to offer a bit of grit and energy, and Fofana to offer something different, probably. But
okay.
we need to, obviously, to make sure we get wide and support the fullbacks. And Ruiz has got to do what he does. Otherwise, you know, he might as well go off to wherever he's going early.
Okay. You know, and like you said, David, we don't know, because Kip is not letting us know who's potentially injured, so that makes it a little bit difficult. But again, this is your starting 11, and I like your starting 11. Mike, what would be your starting 11?
Yeah, it's always difficult when you're asking it, your starting 11, because you are sort of playing mind games, you know, because I would pick a completely different team. You know, there's players being dropped from the squad now who have done nothing wrong, and they're nowhere near the squad. So the team I pick is going to be a sort of what I expect Kit to pick.
Okay.
There's a couple of things. You know, I can't see how... I certainly agree Hoogland will start, and obviously Parker will start, but I can't see how those two can play in a midfield three, to be honest, because you're always going to want Parker, given his performance last week, being a central player. And I don't really see Hoogland in midfield as one of the wider ones. You know, when he has played, he just sits. So if he's going to play, I expect him to be on that right back. So, you know, Richards will find himself benched. And then it'll be Hutchison, Bodroff, and Stafalidis, Bettinelli and goal. So that's a back four. And then the middle three, because it's not really a diamond he's been playing, but I agree with David, it has to be a little bit wider. It will be Parker sitting, Tunnicliffe to his left, and Fofana, who actually on Tuesday, although he played wide, you know, sort of right of Tunnicliffe, he actually played best football in the last 15 minutes when he was moved inside and played as one of a midfield two. So if we went to 4-4-2, I wouldn't mind seeing him start next to Parker. And then Ruiz will play. I'd be very surprised if he's dropped. And I'd go with McCormick and Woodrow up top. But
okay.
So that's a team. That's a team I expect. Though I would prefer 4-4-2 of some kind. But I just can't see Kit going down that road at all.
Okay. As an alternative, again, I don't know who's injured, but would you consider if, say, one of the strikers is not up to it, potentially Moussa Dembélé as kind of a curveball?
I would be happy with Dembélé, and actually I crossed his name out. I had McCormick and Woodrow and Dembélé, and, I thought Dembélé, you know, his little cameo last week, he deserved to come on certainly before Hugo on Tuesday. So I was a little bit disappointed not to see him come out. Certainly see Smith on the bench. But no, I think Woodrow deserves a third start in a row. You know, given you can't keep giving these youngsters a chance, then performing well, then they have a slightly off game and drop them. That's no way to do anything. And so I'd like to see them two start again tomorrow.
Okay, fair enough. All right, Mike, I'm going to go to you first. Give me your prediction.
I'm going to go for a 2-2, actually. I think we will put in a good performance. We do need to score first. But, yeah, 2-2.
2-2. Okay. David?
Actually, I was going to say 2-2 as well. So I'm going to stick my neck on the line then, and just to be different, and say we'll win 2-1.
Wow.
Somehow.
Okay.
Somehow.
Wow, David's
getting
a little positive. He's going to go 2-1 just to be different. Okay. Fair enough. All right. I'm going to go to the Fulham supporters. Kenneth Elseth said, lose 3-0. This is on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. Harry Double said, if we start the game strong and don't concede in the early stages, we can win. Roger Lewis says, we must do a derby. If we do, I predict, just like David, 2-1 to the Whites. Steve Lydiard, our co-host, says, I'm going. And it's my birthday week, and I hope to see a 3-1 Fulham victory scoreline that we can celebrate on Sunday's show. Reg Hollis says 7-6 Cherries, and that would be, you know, a high-scoring affair. Simon Haneed has 3-1 to Bournemouth. So, again, we have people predicting Bournemouth. I get it. Alex Lowy says, I've predicted a loss so often lately, but I've actually got a feeling about this one. 1-0 to Fulham. Andy Fulham FC Newland has 2-0 to Fulham. Matt Smith to score. Interesting. And finally, Ian Walworth has, we will beat them at home after an unlucky good performance against Watford. All right. Time for my prediction. Well, we know who I'm going to predict who's going to score. And I'm also, and I've already said this on the other show, and I'm not changing my mind on this. Guys, I'm going to go with our co-host, Steve Lydiard. I'm predicting a 3-1 victory. I'm going all out here. 3-1. And, David, who's going to score the hat trick?
Alan Kirbishley.
Alan Kirbishley's coming out of retirement. No, it's going to be Ross McCormack is going to score a hat trick. And he will score at some point. As long as he shoots not at the goalkeeper like he has in the last match. Maybe he will get a hat trick, which would be nice. Okay, guys, let's wrap up this show. Mike, again, thank you so much for joining us at the last minute. I really appreciate it, my friend. You were great tonight.
No, that's all right. Thanks for letting me come on, Russ, and enjoyed the show.
That was a fun show, David. As always, you were fantastic, my friend.
Well, thanks very much, and I'll speak to you. No doubt, from tomorrow at the match, and next time I'm on the show, whenever it is, I can't remember when it is, but when I get my emails working again in my wonderful new computer, I'll speak to you then anyway, yeah?
Okay, absolutely. And listen, I do want to mention this because you were asking, David, and others have asked me why I'm not doing a show on Saturday, and again, it's for personal reasons on my behalf. My daughter actually has a dance competition, and I'm going to go see my daughter dance. So we will do a regular show like we have been doing on Sunday. I know the match is on Friday, but we will be doing it on Sunday. And because it's daylight savings time here in America, it will actually be, instead of at 4 o'clock in the UK, it's actually going to be at 3 o'clock. Yeah. So again, things are going to be changing. The clocks are changing here. but not changing for you guys, which is something I don't like. I wish they would change the clocks at the same time. All right, guys, listen, seriously, great show. Before we go, just a reminder, you can download Cottage Talk on iTunes and on the Stitcher Radio app, which is available on the iPhone, iPad, and the Android. Also, you can listen to Cottage Talk on the TuneIn app, which is available at most app stores for your mobile device. Well, that's it for this show. For David Holly and Mike Gregg, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you again, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.
Cheers, Russ. Cheers, Dave.
Cheers.
Cheers, Mike. Cheers, Russ. See you, everyone.
Cheers. See ya.
Boys and